We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This thing on?
See, now I'm getting mad.
Because it's getting ready to be on.
I want my whiskey to bite me a little bit. This is the kind of psychopath that I hang out with. I got beat up outside of a Denny's.
The Rockpile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
He likes to get in the X's nose. Something I can't do with this podcast because I drink too much.
Chris Kruger.
My rollerblading blonde mohawk producer.
The pettiest, hardest drinking Bills podcast.
I'm an adult. I know what I'm about.
Buffalo's beaten Miami six straight times. Josh Allen, as smart as Brian Flores is, and he is, he's a terrific coach, and he may be the second best defensive coach in the league. He can't stop Josh Allen. The last five times Josh Allen has faced Brian Flores, he scores 38 a game, 14 TD, 2 picks, passer rating at 115. Brian Flores can't stop him. Brian Flores knows when I face him, if I stick with Tua for the next 10 years, I will be at a massive size, arm, athletic ability deficit 20 out of 20 times.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I am your host, Bill season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's my producer, Chris Kruger. And that was Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio talking about how the Dolphins have a Buffalo problem.
Oh, yeah, we own the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, isn't it nice that for once, like, your team plays a game so well that the narrative doesn't even become about you. You play so well that the national media doesn't even talk about what you did well, but that the focus immediately changes to, wow, that other team is on a dumpster fire.
Is this the start of what the Dolphins did to us in the 70s? Are we about to win 20 in a row?
It feels like it. It definitely feels like it.
Like, there really hasn't been, since outside of the first start that Josh had against Miami in his rookie year, other than that game, like, nothing's been close at all. I think this is the start of many wins in a row against the Dolphins, and I will drink all of that in.
Since you're sitting here sober ass, I'm going to drink for both of us.
Yeah, you have to. I'm going to go to work later.
Oh, that victory beer tastes sweet. Moosehead just hits different.
Especially after a shutout.
It's literally, shutout Moosehead might be the best Moosehead. It really is. This, ladies and gentlemen, is our week two recap. The Buffalo Bills won 35, Dolphins a zero. Your stats of the game. The Miami quarterbacks combined went for 25 of 44 for 56%, 182 yards, no touchdowns, one pick, no QBR over 59. Josh Allen, 17 to 33, 51%, 179 yards, two touchdowns, one pick, and a 75.3 rating. No Miami wide receiver had more than 50 yards receiving. Stephon Diggs, 8 targets, led all players for the second straight week on Buffalo's roster. 60 yards, 1 touchdown, and a 41-yard completion to his credit. In terms of drops, Buffalo had 0. Miami had 5. Two of them coming on fourth down. Third down conversion rate. Buffalo was 7 of 13 for 53%. Miami was 8 of 18 for 44, which doesn't sound terrible, does it? 44% completion percentage on third down is actually, like, conversion percentage is actually pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. 8 of 18. They just decided to turn the ball over.
Singletary, 2.76 yards per carry after his touchdown run. Moss, 3.25 yards per carry, and 3.25 yards per carry after contact. Yeah. 3.2 yards after contact. Let that soak in. The Bills running backs combined for 21 carries, 108 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 2 fumbles. Dolphins running backs, 16 carries for 63 yards. The Bills defensive linemen under the age of 26, 19 pressures, 14 hurries, 4 hits, 2 sacks. Miami offensive line. And now I need you to take into account the fact that these numbers come from Pro Football Focus, and what this is essentially, because I'll tell you what, we may think that those jerk-offs, that their opinions are trash. Their data extrapolation is trash. But they've got data.
They are douchebags.
Yeah, but man, do they get the data. The raw numbers, they can compile it like nobody else. And when I look at the numbers, one of the things I guess I lose sight of when I look at other websites compared to PFF, PFF credits all things happening in real time. Not just, hey, we're watching film and we saw this one player. Like, this is the guy who forced the quarterback to move, which counts as one pressure. They count all of the guys on any given snap who all got pressures. When you add them together, the Miami offensive line allowed 47 total quarterback pressures. Factor in the Bills only had 8 in week 1. Now, Chris, in terms of the game itself, you couldn't have asked for a better Sunday than the one I got to have. Now, you were at work.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun working there.
So when you're at work and you're zipping around, like, what happens during games? Like, are you shuffling off to find a TV occasionally?
We have a TV in our break room, and I have a break at 1 o'clock. So I generally get to watch the first drive of the game. And then as long as I'm keeping up with what I do at work, I will generally, when I come back to my department, I will stop in the break room and watch about 5 minutes of the game and then head back out. And then I get another, like, a half-hour break at 3 o'clock. So I'm really watching, like, the beginning of the second half. Okay. So I get to watch, I would probably say, 40% of the game as it happens.
So when you're periodically checking back in, what's going through your head as you're watching the score going, what the fuck is happening here?
Well, no, when 1 o'clock happened and they had the ball, I did a reverse Drew Gear. So that first drive that Miami had, to see what our defensive line did to Tua, I was like, this game is over. Because usually you do that the other way. When we have a poor drive in the first quarter.
It's over.
Bills lose. Like, that. Me watching the dog, I'm like, oh, we're going to beat the shit out of the Dolphins.
Part of that is superstition, because I know when I say it, I'm wrong. And then those nights, I usually also end up drinking, what, 9?
Yeah, well, you,
Max Ices?
Yeah, well, your wife texted me that you were like, all right, Bills are going to win. And there's 32 seconds left.
We'll talk about that in a minute. There's context to that you're missing. But for me, who's not at work, who's outside enjoying, you know, life like the rest of us, it was one of the best Sundays I've had watching football in a long time. I mean, I took my wife and kid to my friend Doug and Emma's house. And after Doug promised me on his grandmother's life that if I watched the game with him, the Bills would win. Now, truth is, for living right around the corner from me, literally half a mile, for over a year, I haven't seen much of Doug or his wife because we both had kids under the age of 3 that keeps us pretty busy.
Isn't your kid and his son, like, 3 days apart?
Yes. So Sunday, with gorgeous weather, we and a handful of his family members post up at his garage hangout, which I think here, colloquially, it's known as the Polish patio. Okay, it's where people screen off their garage and then fill it with furniture and a beer fridge. And he's got an array of snacks and an 80-inch TV, and we watched the game. It was a low-key day, but it was a lot of fun because I get to spend it with my kid, all decked out in his Bills gear. And even though he's only 16 months, he genuinely is starting to get football. I mean, he claps and cheers whenever a play ends, regardless of what team it's for. Whenever everybody else starts celebrating, he throws both hands up in the air like in the touchdown motion and just starts looking around for affirmation that that's what he should be doing.
So this is like he's the complete opposite of Kyle Trimble's son.
Yes.
When he was...
Who's just indifferent.
Yeah, because when Kyle's kid was like 16 months and was over watching games and we all cheered, he would lose it and start crying.
No,
Jack doesn't do any of that?
Chris, that's not fair. That's not fair to Kyle or his son because let's face it. When you're 16 months old and you're faced with lunatic Drew Geer who's not your father, it's startling.
I can see that.
Yeah. Well,
it should be startling for Jack anyway.
No, because he's used to it. We're breaking him in. He watched the whole Alabama game with me. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, we're breaking him in.
See, usually when I come over to your house, Jack is usually all smiles when he sees me because, like, oh, look at that. Another a good looking male in the house, not my my ugly father.
Listen, I may be ugly, but that kid loves watching football with me, and we did it a ton this weekend, and it was great. But so I spent a large portion of the day, except for the end, where he finally just caved and said, listen, toys and the other kids are more appealing than this football nonsense. He was sitting by me and my wife, literally on a bar stool at this pub-style table in a garage, just mowing down on snacks with a juice box, cheering on the Buffalo Bills. And at one point, after a Greg Rousseau sack, he literally, his eyes lit up, he leaned over and stuck his hand up, and he put his hand out to high-five me. And it, Chris, I'm not going to lie to you. You can say whatever you want about me. I don't care. You know I don't have any feelings. I teared up a little bit. Like, it choked me up a little bit that Mike, I'm like, you're so little, but you know what this is. Like, you know what's happening, and it made me so happy. This season is going to be a fun one, if for no other reason than I get at least a handful more games of that in my life.
This is going to get a lot worse when Jack gets older, and you're clearly living vicariously through him.
Oh, no. I'm just picturing me and him, like, tag-teaming wicker furniture in the backyard. My wife just yelling at us out the window. I'm holding it so he can karate kick through it like it's like the garage scene in Step Brothers.
Do you want to go do karate in the garage?
But so on to the... Like, it was one of the most rewarding days of football I've had in a long time. But now on to the football conversation, if we're going to dissect this game. And it starts with Miami's massive failures. Let's talk about that. The Pettiest Bills podcast, Chris, what do you think we do? We get together and we dunk on people who sucked. Putting up zero in the NFL is a difficult thing to accomplish. And a lot of things have to conspire together in order to get there. For a poor preparation and game planning? Check. Lack of execution on the field? Check. Bad luck? Check. Yeah, the Dolphins checked all the boxes on how you end up getting shut out. When's the last time the Bills got shut out? Do you remember?
No.
I can't off the top of my head.
No, it had to have been... We didn't get shut out in that 6-10 season, Josh Allen's rookie year, or maybe with Rex Ryan?
No, I still can't recall a single shutout. In the history of this podcast, I don't think we've been shut out.
Well, I'll have to call in if you know.
But so there's a contingent of our fan base that likes to jump all over every negative thing this team does. So I think it's fair we turn a quick magnifying glass to just how the hell Miami managed this. I mean, the failure was so widespread I could only chunk it into a few categories. First of all, one, the preparations. And last week in our preview show, Elf Arteaga of 3 yards per carry, he makes the note that with sophomore left tackle Austin Jackson on the COVID list, rookie offensive tackle Jesse Eichenberg was put into the game in the left tackle spot and didn't look bad. And yet, to his disappointment, instead of riding the hot hand at the position, where they absolutely needed a strong presence, they sent the kid back to the bench, thinking Jackson and Jesse Davis were the answer. I mean, I think that alone tells you that this staff was playing checkers in a chess match. Literally taking an overly simplistic approach, like, we drafted this guy in the first round, so he has to play, over what their eyes and any Dolphins fan who actually knows what the fuck is going on could tell you was necessary. Then there's the game plan. The Dolphins very, very quickly had to realize that protection was going to be a problem. Chris, if you watched the, if you got to see more than that first drive, even on that first drive, you probably recognize like, hey, the Bills are getting home. That's weird.
Yeah, I noticed. I got to see that drive, and then also I watched a little bit of the drive where Tua got hurt.
Yeah,
and it was this just like a repeat performance of the first drive. Like their offensive line is just awful.
And yet, when you look at the play calling, both before and after that, I mean, who the hell is at the wheel of this thing? Your team comes into the game missing its only proven vertical threat, and then you try to base a passing attack primarily off 5 and 7 step drops. Even 3 step drops weren't working. They legit only tried play action for half of Tua's attempts and only 12% of Brissett's. They had no regard for their quarterback's safety and zero ability to change things up midstream. Jason Sanders is a Pro Bowler last year and probably one of the more reliable kickers in the NFL. And yet multiple times in that first half, while only trailing by 2 scores, the Miami coaches opted to either punt or to go for it on 4th down instead of taking points and chipping away at the Bills' lead in the game, where if you look at it, because of the job their coverage units were doing, Josh Allen was being held pretty firmly in check. When things are so lopsided against your offense, wouldn't you think, as a fan of that football team, Chris, that they would have been better served taking any points they could get their hands on whenever they could?
Yeah, I would have.
And instead, no, fuck it, let's go for it. Let's just keep going for it, even though it's not working. What a bunch of schmucks. And then the execution, too. Like, that's the final category. And even that shit show has layers that, like an onion, as you peel it back, it just starts to stink more. Drops and unforced mistakes. Parker drops that Chris. I sagged a little bit. Because I'm like, Trey White, you're so good. You're so good, and you had Parker covered for so long. Why did you quit on the coverage? The ball comes in. I'm like, all right, well, that's a touchdown. And it bounces off Devontae Parker's hands into the, like, out of bounds, out of the back of the end zone. And that's the moment I knew the Dolphins were done. Like, that was it.
Not with 32 seconds
left. I wasn't
left.
Willing to call it. I wasn't willing to say it out loud. But that was the moment where, like, inside you do that, all right, deep breath.
No, as soon as I saw our D-line doing that shit all first half, like, they got no chance.
Albert Wilson drops a sure first down while Miami was still trying to get some momentum with Brissett. Like, hey, let's help him get his sea legs. Wide open. Oh, you dropped that. Jalen Waddle muffs a punt for a turnover that leads to a score. Like, nobody made you screw that up. You just did it because you're not good. Tackling. Zach Moss literally averaged as many yards after contact as he averaged yards in the game. How wild is that? Like, hey, you're going to touch me, but it doesn't matter because fuck you. I'm Zach Moss. Now, you find out in the aftermath of this that he had just buried his aunt the previous day. His head's not quite right. And we'll get to that in a second, but I think that what he accomplished was impressive. And then the pass blocking. I mean, the stats individually don't do it justice, just how shitty of a day it was for Miami's pass protectors. Not a single player on the offensive line got a better than 50 grade in pass protection. The Miami quarterbacks spent 67% and 59% of their dropbacks under pressure, and neither had more than 2.7 seconds to throw. That's hilarious!
I like it.
At one point, I legitimately started to feel bad for Jacoby Brissett. I mean, that poor bastard, he just signed up with Miami to kind of be there for some gadget plays and said, maybe I'll see a little action here and there. Late in the fourth quarter, he's still just taking shots. And with no third string, Miami doesn't have a third string quarterback on the roster. So it's literally Brissett or bust. And so he's got to go out there down after down after down and just get kicked in the head. He's taking body shots. I mean, at the end, I thought he was hurt. Do you remember that? Or maybe you were on the replay when you watched it. Towards the end, he's starting to get up and he's gimpy. And it's almost like it's really taking him some effort to get up off the floor. And I'm going, this poor guy has no, they can't even put in another guy. There's nobody else. They don't have another quarterback. He's like a punch-drunk boxer who just doesn't know how to stay down. If I was him, I would have stayed down.
Yeah.
Made them go pull in a wide receiver to finish this game. Jesus. I mean, he was just there bearing the weight of his entire team's sins deep into the fourth quarter. Just taking punches until the clock hit zero. And Dolphins Twitter and the podcast universe was hysterical on Monday morning. I mean, I've got a couple tweets here that I aggregated. First off, Ron Caniff, who we've had him on the show a couple times in our history.
Yep.
Ron Caniff changed his avatar on Twitter from his professional headshot to a photo of, it's an x-ray of a person who got an arrow shot through their skull and lived. And he said, this is going to be my AVI until we beat the goddamn Buffalo Bills.
Going to be up there for a while.
He also tweeted out later in the day, guys, I'm sorry. I don't know if I, no, shortly after the game. Guys, I'm sorry. I don't know if I felt this bad about a loss since 62-7 in 1999. I wasn't expecting us to win, but I had no clue we'd look like that. I feel like someone kicked my nuts over and over for four quarters. Meanwhile, Tua Gang. Tua Gang, who is a guy that I follow just because it's funny. We go back and forth. I love this. I love that, Chris, we've got a contingent of followers from every fan base around the division.
Yeah, we do. I think of any of the fan base, it's the Dolphins people that we follow, and they follow us back.
We're the most fun with.
They are just as petty as we are.
Yes. So this guy quote tweeted Ari Mirov from My Sports Update talking about how the Eagles left tackle Jordan Mailata was Pro Football Focus's highest graded offensive lineman, and that he had zero pressures, zero quarterback hits, and zero sacks allowed. Reminder, Mailata never played football at any level until 2018. He signed a big four-year, $64 million extension before week one. And he quoted that and said, other teams are picking up franchise offensive linemen from the loading dock at CVS, and we can't find one with 18 first-round picks. Chris, that's the kind of acrimony that we live for, right?
100%.
That's it. And on the reaction podcast, Elf Arteaga, who I can't wait to talk to in this week's AFC's Roundup, made a hilariously damning observation. Austin Jackson is clearly not good enough of an offensive tackle to be relied on regularly in the NFL. Maybe he will be, but at this point, look at this. They pointed out the fact that one of his reps, he got bowled over and he got pushed into the quarterback. And it wasn't by Greg Rousseau. It wasn't by Mario Addison or some other massive physical specimen of a defensive end. It was by 225-pound Matt Milano. Matt fucking Milano. To have a man Jackson's size getting bullied into someone who's almost a full 100 pounds lighter than him speaks to mechanical issues and leverage issues that not even Dante Scarnecchia could fix. Meaning putting him, you can't hide him. What are you going to do with him, Chris? You can't put him in the middle of the offensive line where defensive tackle. What, you want him going up against a D-tackle? He just got punked by Matt Milano. That's hilarious. Oh, my God. I mean, what? He's supposed to. Now his quarterbacks are just going to have guys in their face almost immediately off the snap. I mean, that idea is a non-starter. He's a man without a home right now in the Dolphins' offensive line. Isn't it fun watching other fan bases suffer? Especially after what our fan base, the temper tantrums that they threw after we lost that first game to the Steelers.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love watching Dolphins fans suffer. That's like the number one fan base I want to watch suffer, Dolphins.
See, I used to say it was the Patriots, but honestly, some of them are too delusional to be reasoned with. But, I mean, they're from Boston.
Yeah.
As the great Louis C.K. says, it's a whole city full of people pronouncing most things wrong. Like, that's just, okay. You guys just want to be idiots. That's fine. Most of you were bandwagoners for your team, too. Not the Dolphins. The Dolphins, that's lifelong suffering. Nobody bandwagoned when they got Dan Marino. They were just long-suffering fans who were there when their quarterback happened to show up.
Yeah, and they got lucky to fall into Dan Marino.
It's hilarious to me. But all I know is this. It's fun knowing that the ways that they lost are being so scrutinized. You heard it in the open. That's why we opened with that. The whole world's attention is being paid to that. And I know I probably bored the shit out of most of our Bills fan listeners who are like, wait, this is a Bills podcast. Why are we just talking about the ways Miami sucks? Chris, that's what this is about. We're a good football team.
Yeah.
Last week, I said it. that the Bills were better than they showed. Didn't we? Did we not? I feel like this is Gladiator. I want to unbutton the rest of my shirt and walk around your kitchen going, are you not entertained?
Keep your shirt on, please. This make things more uncomfortable.
Yeah, I undid one button. Yeah, take that. Whole lot of chest hair in your face. Ugh. But the Bills weren't perfect. And I'd never want to end the podcast on a down note, so I want to get this out of the way now. Not nearly as dominant as our perfect score might indicate. We got to take a little bit of medicine here. If we're going to throw shade, we have to take it evenly. The game was a lot closer than the box score makes it feel. Lord knows everybody in the room with me knows I felt that way. Now, Chris, explain to the listeners. Did you prompt my wife for that text, or did she text you apropos of nothing?
She just texted me out of the blue, said, with 32 seconds left, Drew finally conceded that the Bills would win the game. So 35-0 in the fourth quarter, you thought there was a chance Miami was coming back. You're such an idiot.
They led 14-0 at halftime. But if the Finns weren't greedy on fourth down and Devontae Parker remembers how his hands work, it could have been 14-13 real quick. Correct?
Yeah, and guess what? That didn't happen.
Okay. More turnovers from Buffalo, this time early instead of late, and each of them on our own side of the field. We're just brutally executed plays, and things that I think against a better offense would have absolutely cost us points. Specifically, Allen's interception that put the Dolphins smack into the red zone. This game had every bit of the potential to end differently if the Dolphins had any composure. The Bills' passing attack is still struggling to find even 2019 levels of success, much less 2020 levels. And the natives around Buffalo are starting to get restless, right?
Yeah.
Now, I took a look at the tape, which I hate being the guy who said, do you know what a douche I feel like being, oh, I gotta go watch the film? Or saying the things like, I watched the All-22 in my analysis. Shut up. You saw the same game we all saw. You don't... I could do a whole podcast on just that.
Bills football is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Bills tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee site, and the only one you'll ever need is your go-to NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all of their NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. Visit TickPick.com/Rockpile today and use the promo code ROCKPILE to save $10 on your first order of Bills ticket.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The downfield stuff that was the crux of our passing game last year. The deep ends, the deep curls in the posts, they're just not there. Allen's... And there's reason for that, though. And I'll say this. I know I just made fun of people who talk like that, but listen to this. Allen is being manipulated by defenses. You know, he's being forced to his left instead of his right now because teams have learned that's a bad idea. His deep options are being taken away more consistently than they were in the past. Allen, through 2 weeks, has gotten stuck looking for chunk plays that he used to get. The same ones' defenses are now better equipped and prepared to take away than they were last season because they saw how we do it. I'm not a huge listener to the Locked On Bills podcast. And it's not a slight to Joe Marino. It's not like I'm saying he's... Chris, we've had him on the show before.
Yep.
We talked to him here and there. It's just that I'm a guy with only so much time to allocate to podcasts. And only a small portion of that goes towards sports podcasts. And I've talked about this dynamic with Buffalo Rumbling's Bruce Nolan in the past. Something happens to you when you listen to other people's content that revolves around the same thing you create, whether it's podcasts, whether it's WGR 550, that unintentionally it reshapes the way you think about things and it colors the way that you yourself might execute what it is you do. Call me a purist, but until we've done our show, I don't listen to anything Bills related for that exact reason. Because I know what I think, I know how I feel, and I want to put that out there. That's the reason we're here, right?
Yeah, you don't want to be influenced.
Yeah, well, I just, not even that I, and even that sounds hack saying it, but it's like I don't want to be the guy who parrots somebody else unintentionally or takes up somebody else's opinion, not even because it's like, well, that's a good thought. And Bruce is urging, I listened to Joe Marino's latest mailbag podcast today. And he did a better job explaining how these struggles aren't any one person's fault, but an amalgamation of Allen playing into defensive hands by being greedy, our passing attack structure not throwing anyone off the scent the way they used to, which he has data to back up that, like our play action percentage and blitz percentage decreasing while we see an increase in pressure, and teams having film on how we design our attack. Do yourselves a favor. Go listen to this podcast. Those of you who are pissed off about Josh Allen, you won't regret it. And in that same way, Eric Turner had some great looks at what I was seeing in real time watching the game, that these deep plays that we used to make downfield aren't available anymore because the defensive is actively taking them away, forcing Allen to go to ancillary options, which he doesn't want to do yet. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Maybe it's his pressure. Chris, we know Josh Allen. Isn't he the guy who takes everything to heart?
Yeah.
He feels like everything's his job.
Yeah, he puts a lot of pressure on himself, more than what he gets from the national media.
I think he's trying to win these football games. He's trying to win these football games. But sometimes you just got to take what's given to you. I mean, look at Aaron Jones. 4 touchdowns. How many of those were passes, just dump off passes from Aaron Rodgers last night during Monday Night Football?
Well, the first one was one of the hot potato play.
Yeah.
Where he just threw it up as he came in motion.
It's like, look, sometimes you have to just take the small victory and hope it turns into something better. And if it doesn't, you live to fight another day.
Well, my thing with Allen would be is, and I'm using air quotes here, has he been, quote unquote, figured out by defense?
I don't think so, but I think that what he's trying to do is he's trying to recreate 2020. And everyone else is banking on that. And him and Dable need to get together and figure that out because his ball placement is kind of a mess. I mean, that first, he's had a couple overthrows. He just doesn't look comfortable. And look at this, 12 attempts of more than 10 yards downfield and 10 incompletions. Because he knows enough not to throw picks, but he's also like, I still want those big plays. Last year under pressure, Allen made electric plays when he was able to elude the rush with natural athleticism. Games like the Rams game, right? But against Miami, much like when Pittsburgh played defense against us, there was none of that to be found. I mean, he was 4 of 12 when Miami blitzed. And when pressured, he had a 25% completion percentage. You're not going to win football games like that. You're not. Now, on one hand, we've played 2 very talented secondaries and defenses. So that number, his statistics can improve. But it's like I said last week. Once your scheme gets figured out, it's easy for people to take away your tried and true methods of execution and then start to dictate the pace of things back to you. Through 2 games, I see no evidence that Dable has truly learned this yet and figured out that teams have a leg up on their schematic tendencies and their tendencies when pressure gets applied. And those are the things that allowed them to be so successful last year. Obviously, we'd like to see better pass protection, but that isn't the sole reason for all of our struggles, and I guarantee that's where the frustration in Josh's voice comes from. Whenever he has to field questions about our passing game woes, it's just, it's a problem. And they have to get it ironed out. I mean, McKenzie, here's just a small... McKenzie was our motion man last year. 25% of our snaps in 2020. That role has been decreased by about 10% per game because they're now relying on him for special teams utility as well as wide receiver production. And I'm not sure how I feel about that, considering how much they're struggling after losing that dynamic to their attack. They got to figure out a way. It's a new way. It's like I said, this is what happened to the 2019 Rams. The Bills can't go down that path. We can't. This is a season that's too important. You have to generate old efficiencies with a new script. I trust that if anybody's going to put the work in to fix things, isn't it Josh Allen?
Yeah.
All right. So are we clear that this is a... Okay, I've said my piece. I've vented. Now we can talk about some things that rocked, right? Levi Wallace and Zach Moss both had themselves a bounce back game. Last week, people were out in droves with pitchforks and flaming torches like he was Frankenstein's monster, talking about Levi Wallace sucks and we need to get him the fuck out of here. Chris, hell of a game.
Yeah, a great interception.
Not just a great interception, but you could see multiple plays where his awareness of football was on display. The pass breakup. I mean, I know he got flagged for it, right? He got flagged for taunting.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back. And I said it. Here's the best part. So what he shows on that play is an understanding of like, hey, I'm watching. I know how to shadow my man in zone coverage, but also keep my eyes on the quarterback. And when he makes an ill-advised throw, I'm going to go punish that guy. He's a small guy who's not known for being a big hitter. But when he makes a hit like that, you can tell it's like, listen, maybe he's taking some of this stuff to heart. He buries this guy. He makes the incomplete motion. And they throw this ridiculous flag. And everyone in the garage at Doug's house is throwing a fit. And we're all just like, oh, bullshit, the no fun league. Bah, bah, bah. But then me and Doug's father-in-law are sitting there talking. And I go, you know, Meyer, not for nothing. I go, usually it just makes it worse. Like, I've never watched a football game where someone got flagged for taunting that it didn't just end, like that didn't just gas up the players on the other side of the ball more. Not to mention that player who got flagged. Because he says, okay, I can't even talk. Fine. I'll let my play do the talking for me. A handful of plays later, he comes away with that just... It was a great interception because he shattered his man, but never stopped looking at the quarterback. And he broke on that ball almost as soon as he threw it. It was one of the most pure interceptions I've seen in a while. You would have thought Trey White made that play. But it was Levi Wallace. If it wasn't for him cramping and then going out of the game and aggravating whatever it is that Sean McDermott says he aggravated, he looked the part of a CB2 in this game. Even people who hate him can't deny that. And then Zach Moss. Look at Zach Moss. He's a dude who last week was a scratch, and everyone said, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. We all speculated. And then Sean McDermott's like, well, he was hurt. And we just thought that in camp, Breda showed this, that, and the other, and blah, 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 blah. Chris, if Matt Breda's in the game instead of Zach Moss, does he score 2 touchdowns?
No.
Does he body people up on the goal line?
No.
Like Doctor Strange just doing like the soul removal from the body thing. Like,
I don't remember. I don't know that reference.
Oh, of course you don't because you don't watch movies. Zach Moss came into this game. And this is what I love about the mental toughness of our football players was on display with both of these guys. Levi Wallace had a bad game. He comes back in early. He's showing out. Early in this game, Zach Moss had the worst start he could ask for. Just a bad fumble. Bad fumble. Andrew Van Ginkle jumps over his shoulder, punches that ball out. That's textbook you need to have 3 points of contact. And he's not hanging onto that ball hard enough. And it comes out, and it's a turnover on our side of the field that easily could have gone for points. And we joked about it in the garage at the time. We're like, that's it. See, bye, Moss. Go back to the bench. Singletary looks like he's rocking shit. But then after Singletary's big run, like our stats kind of alluded to, his success kind of dried up. He wasn't really hitting big runs. And they saw fit to bring Zach Moss back in the game. And Zach Moss mowed people down in that second half. Angry runs. And then you find out afterwards that his aunt died, who he was very close with. They buried her the day before, and he's coming into this game. Now, Chris, this kind of accounts to one of those things. Now, you spend a lot of time, a lot more time than I do, with Reed Ferguson.
Yeah.
Hell, you lived with him.
He lived with me.
He lived with you. Yes. I don't want to. Let's correct that. He lived with Chris, not the other way around. Football players are people. It's a thing that I'll always pound the table for. These are not robots. They're not automatons. They can't. If a family member. Now, I've had things go the opposite way. I've had people close to me. It was a softball game. Jan Ronaldo. I got the call from my mother as I was driving to a softball game that a guy who was a friend of the family, not related by blood, but he had died that afternoon. Drop dead. Blood clot. 52, 53, 54. He was my father's age. Drop dead of a blood clot. This was a guy who had made me grilled cheese sandwiches and played with micro machines. I mean, if you're a 90s kid, you know what those are. Played Nintendo with me. I mean, he was a stoner, so that makes sense. But he owned his own business, so he could afford to be. Like, he's just ran his own business. He was a stoner, and he hung out with me, and he was close. And when he died, like, I remember sitting in the parking lot of that game. Just, I'm sitting there before anyone else is there, and I'm trying not to cry, and I'm thinking about just, I have so much in my head. And then the game comes, and they're just like, "Sir, do you want to play?" And I was like, "I don't know, this thing just happened." And they were like, "All right, well, why don't you sit down?" And I was like, "No, I have to play, or else I'm just going to sit here and keep thinking about this." And that clarity gave me one of the best games of softball I've ever played in my entire life. Not everybody reacts that way. Zach Moss didn't react that way early. And I wouldn't blame him if his head wasn't in it. But when he refocused, Chris, you have to give these guys second chances, right?
Yeah.
Especially the guys who you trust to be, like, you drafted him to be the future of this running back room.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Part of it.
Or part of it. Kind of the hammer to Devin Singletary shake and bake.
Yeah.
Did he or did he not recenter himself in the middle of a football game and put that on display for everybody?
Oh, he did, and that's how he got in the end zone twice there.
All right, so I will tolerate no more Zach Moss slander. I won't. Like, that's a dude. But the big story of the day, the defensive line dominate. I mean, Chris, isn't that the thing we all want to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing we all... I'm cracking another beer. I'm two-fisting now. That's how excited I am about this. Hell yeah! This is the story. This front seven and the pass rush. Now, as I alluded to in the stats, our young defensive ends carried the load and had a day against the offensive tackles of Miami. AJ Epenesa had 9 pressures. I think I read he's the first player since 2019 to have 9 in a single game. And he's the guy credited with knocking Tua out of the game. Greg Rousseau with 8 pressures, 2 sacks. I mean, each of them were impressive for different reasons. I mean, you throw Ed Oliver in there with a couple pressures, a good presence in the middle of the defensive line. Each of those two were impressive for different reasons. Epenesa, now, you know, Chris. You harvested the audio. How did I feel about AJ Epenesa when we drafted him? Because I hate this pick, and I'll tell you why I hate it. It's not so much that I hate the player. He's not the most athletic guy in the world. I literally just got done running down all of the things that he's not good at as an athlete. He's not explosive in terms of athletic ability. He's not fast. He's not the strongest guy in the room. There's nothing that he does at a high level.
It was you minutes after we drafted him on hashtag sports YouTube channel.
The Epenesa I saw on Sunday is not the guy that I thought we were drafting. I mean, Epenesa now, he's a powerful dude who they slimmed down and molded into a more agile defensive end, and it's worked because now we're seeing that he understands. He already knew how to play with violent hands. He already knew how to play with force. He already knew how to play with what was between his ears. Now he's shown that he has speed and technique, and he can beat people up. I mean, he had a couple great reps, right, against Austin Jackson, back to back to back. He bull rushes Austin Jackson back into the pocket, and then a couple plays later, he comes back, chops his hands out of the way, and sweeps across the offensive tackle's face. He shows you power, speed, and a mix of the two all day long on Sunday. And then again, specifically on that play against veteran Jesse Davis, where he put Tua out of the game. That's the fastest I've seen a tackle get beat all season.
It was pretty legit.
Epinesa is a fucking problem.
Yeah, he is. That is, what, that might be the third person that it looks like you're wrong about.
Chris, how many am I wrong about? That's why draft season is not our season.
Josh,
it's analyst season.
Josh Allen, Matt Milano.
Trey White.
Trey White.
When we draft people, I generally don't like it, but that's good. That's good for everybody else, because if I don't like it, it seems to go. Zach Moss?
Yep. I think you were looking at other running backs instead of him.
I wanted everybody except for Zach Moss. Greg Rousseau, tell me that the smart people didn't come on this podcast. Bruce Nolan on this show, I have it on my phone as a GIF. We're not going to play it as a drop because it's just too much. But he chuckled and, in fact, was very – I'm going to tweet it out. I'm going to retweet it. I'm going to go back. Go to at RockPileReport on Twitter right now. You can find it, where we had Greg Thompson and Bruce Nolan on this podcast. And Bruce Nolan started laughing when we brought up the idea of Greg Rousseau in the first round. And he was like, oh, no, I absolutely do not want that. Nobody should want that. Chris, even the smart people can be wrong, right?
Surprising. That's a thing, that if you're smart, you can be wrong, but...
He was everywhere. He jacked them up. When you get that kind of production from the defensive ends, you're feeding the most snaps to, the ripple effect, it's just palpable, and it opens up your options and allows you to get creative with the timing of your blitzes. As evidenced by the fact that by using the defensive line pressure, kind of the way a boxer uses jabs and straight rights to set up bigger punches and combinations... The Bills had the ability to bring pressure with their DBs and coverage linebacker, something I saw very little of in 2020, almost whenever they felt like they had the opportunity. And the results were as devastating as any uppercut I've seen get landed in the ring. Blitzes from the outside corner, the slot corner, and the safety. White, Johnson, and Poyer, some of our best coverage players, which means offensive coordinators and quarterbacks are not expecting it, right? Five pressures, three hurries, and one sack. And could have been two if Trey White didn't get rope-a-dope by Jacoby Brissett. I mean, I just felt bad for him after that play because Jacoby Brissett pump fakes and Trey White stops and turns around. And Jacoby Brissett just, like, runs away. It's like, damn it, Trey, you were so close. But it's okay. I mean, we dominated the game. But it's one of those things where these are the guys with pressure, so when they do... Even the guy throwing the football is like, wait, what is that? Matt Milano, seven pressures, five hurries, and one sack. They use him to attack every part of the offensive line. Offensive tackles, the A gaps, the B gaps. I mean, the A and B gaps are where you expect your linebackers to drive their pressure. Instead, he's rushing from the outside. He's incredibly versatile. And now he just put something on tape that every offensive coordinator and offensive line coach is that we play for the next month is going to have to spend time working on. Because they're going to look at that and go, Jesus Christ, if they think they can get Milano in there and Milano can push a tackle to the ground. Now, never mind the fact that Austin Jackson's garbage. But if he can do that, we're going to have to be prepared for that. And then just the synergy of it all. I mean, I remember back in the days of the Bills cold front, Chris. Back when Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, before he smoked his way on a slow boat to Shanghai, like that.
Pre-sailor hat.
That defensive line had synergy. Those four dudes with Jerry Hughes worked together to create sacks and pressure. So when I watch Greg Rousseau crashing inside and Jacoby Brissett just narrowly escaping him, only to get mopped up by Justin Zimmer. That's what this defensive front was missing last season, right?
Yeah.
That dominant presence on the edges that was going to force guys to step up so that our athletic defensive tackles could come in and mop up. It was a party all day long behind the line of scrimmage, and it was like a game of volleyball. That's how I see it. One guy setting another guy up to spike it. Those were the sacks and the pressures and the quarterback hits that we were able to derive. And that's something that I haven't seen out of this front in a long time. Not ever in Sean McDermott's career. So that's incredibly encouraging. I mean, Chris, when we get to the hero and zero of the game, who do you even name as a hero in a game like that?
Everyone.
Is that it?
It's everyone.
Everyone on the defensive side of the ball?
Yes.
Do you know who the real heroes are? The guys who wake up every morning and go into their normal jobs and get a distress call from the commissioner and take off their glasses and change into capes and fly around fighting crime.
Before we started recording, you said something to me that I thought was hilarious. About, what was it, anybody who tied a shoelace?
Yeah.
Anybody who brought water?
You brought water to Poyer. You're a hero. You changed your laces or brought them new cleats. Hero of the game.
Anybody who served in any capacity for the defensive side of the ball, you're a hero today. Why? Because you played a part in what was the most systematic dismantling of another football team I've ever seen in my entire life.
It might be the most complete defensive game we'll have all season.
Not just all season. Chris, I haven't seen anything like that from Buffalo in decades.
Since the cold front?
Not even with the cold front.
I'm sure there's some games.
Defense didn't put that big. When you as a quarterback spend more than 60% of every time you drop back to pass under pressure, that's unheard of. But that's college team playing in the NFL. That's why I laugh when people say, oh, well, Alabama could beat this team because they're so good and that team's so bad. No, you don't understand what NFL pressure is. When it comes from a defensive line, NFL pressure is enough to break you in half. Especially if you're an underdeveloped college kid or like Austin Jackson, just some kid who sucks at football who got thrust into a starting job. I love how involuntarily I keep going back to that. It's not even scripted. The dude sucks. It's really funny. But I look at this and I say to myself, you as a defensive coordinator, as a defensive-minded head coach, have crafted something that this Miami Dolphins team cannot fuck with. They have no success against you. And it's because your defense, even when it's not great, think back to last year when we go down to Miami and we're up big and our offense is humming. And their team starts to creep back into it slowly. Well, yeah, that's because we had Tyrell Dodson and A.J. Klein in coverage. And yet, they're so good on defense, they found a way to make that work for a full half of football. We have their number not because we have Josh Allen. Not because our offensive playmakers are better than theirs. It's because Sean McDermott and that defensive side of the staff just understand to a man, like, hey, we can take Miami apart. We can outcoach them. And they did it this week from top to bottom. And the zero of the game, I mean, Chris, when everything goes right, who do you call a zero? I know who. Matt Millen. Fucking embarrassing! I got a text message from a good friend of mine. Middle of the game. I'm going to read it to you. I want to get the timestamp. Let's take a look. Okay, so this text came in Sunday at 3:16 p.m. It says, I thought you were a little rough on Matt Millen this week. Oh my God, were you right. He is unlistenable. To which I responded, we should go make a citizen's arrest and stop this madness. I wasn't kidding that he's a hack. He's awful. He ruined the game. He ruined the game for anybody who had ears. Anybody who isn't Beethoven trying to write a symphony without being able to hear anything, Matt Millen ruined your game day experience. Why? Because he's this blithering old man who should... Chris, I think I said it pretty well. He should have been put in Gitmo just for crimes against football well before the booth ever opened up to him, correct?
Correct.
Listen to some of this nonsense.
Here's what you substitute for. So energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, correct? So in football, it's not that. It's impact equals mass, not your weight, but how big you are, times your speed. And so add a little bit of Archimedes in there, which is a leverage guy, right? Give me a lever, I'll move the world. So that is how a 200-pound guy can deliver a blow because he's running faster into that impact and have that impact and still score.
That is Matt Millen, philosophy analyst for Fox Sports.
That sounds like someone's high school teacher got drunk at a party. Like, that's what that sounds like. It sounds like my high school physics teacher got drunk and just started lecturing everybody in the middle of a football game. I'd actually believe that more than I would believe the fact that that's a real broadcast and that's a real thing that just went out over the airwaves. What a disaster. Chris, your final thoughts.
It's a hell of a win. I always love beating Miami. On to the next one, which will be Washington. It's a fantastic game. Dominated across the board.
I love how recently you've just let me rant. Two beers, two open beers, shirt unbuttoned. You're just letting me over here cut loose. This has literally just been almost a stream of consciousness podcast.
I don't know about that.
I think I get rolling. Here's what I'll say. You're very succinct, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate that your knowledge of X's and O's is growing as we do this for longer.
Which you have nothing to do with.
Nope, nothing, because I don't have the patience to teach you football. None. None whatsoever. My final thoughts here, as we close out tonight's podcast. I almost want to open a third beer, but I'm not gonna. We lost last week to the Steelers. And we got all kinds of messages and tweets talking about how people were almost disappointed to not get more rage from me on this podcast. But the reality is, I was willing to remain optimistic because, like I said, we aren't as bad as we played that. We played almost a scratch game if it wasn't for a special teams touchdown. And we almost won that thing. And everyone's talking about how terrible we are. And I said, we aren't as bad as we played. We're better than that, and we'll show everybody. Other people, with much larger platforms than us, on the other hand, decided it was time for hyperbole and detritus. From the local journalists and the local radio callers, who are their own breed of lunatic unto themselves, to the national talking heads and just idiots with microphones, things got wild.
Miami's going to beat the Bills. The Bills are going to fall to 0-2. The Bills got to go down to Miami. You have that outstanding Miami defense that knows they don't have to worry about a running game at all from Buffalo. You have a Bills defense that I think is inferior to the Patriots defense from last week, so it should be a little easier on Tua. And I just think this is a golden opportunity, Wilds, for the Dolphins.
Yeah, Nick Wright.
No, that was Toucan Sam.
Yeah, Nick.
Oh, wait. Nick.
Nick Wright, first things first.
I'm sorry, I get confused.
Fox Sports TV. He was wrong about everything in that clip.
I'm sorry, I got confused. I thought it was a cartoon bird in a suit. Fuck that guy. Disappointing that loss was, but after one game, you think Miami's the answer? Against this football team? Someone bring me the head of Nick Wright. Right now. I want you to bring it to me. I'd like to put him and Matt Millen in the same car, shove Brian Cox Sr. in the trunk, and set it on fire in an abandoned strip mall parking lot. Yeah. I'll see them all in hell, alongside anybody else content to throw dirt on this football team after one loss. That wasn't just a win. It was a statement win. It was a reminder to everyone else in this fucking division that even when our offensive line doesn't have a great day, even when our offense isn't clicking and the balls are ending up on the turf or in our opponent's hands, and a multi-million dollar quarterback is putting up rookie stat lines, we're still capable of taking a fucking shovel to each and every one of your grimy faces. Know that. It's a reminder to every GM in the division that for as much money as you might have spent in the offseason, or for all the draft capital you might have amassed and spent in the last calendar year, you're still building. We're already built. And it's a reminder to every loudmouth fan, both outside of our fan base and inside, that this team here is the best coached, most cohesive, and well-rounded collection of football talent that our division has to offer. Forget that at your own peril. Remember in the run-up to the season when I talked about rookie expectations for Greg... rookie expectations as a whole for the class. And I talked about Greg Rousseau. He's already exceeded those expectations. Meanwhile, AJ Epenesa is everything that I thought he couldn't be. That concept should scare the hell out of everyone outside of Buffalo. Not just because of what it means for them, but what it gives this defense the freedom to be. The return of Star has our linebackers flying around. Our secondary is still just as talented as they always were. 2 weeks in a row, we've wholly smothered our opponent's passing units. For fuck's sake, the Dolphins could only take 3 shots of more than 10 yards downfield the entire game. You're losing. You're getting blown out, and you can't even air it out because your quarterbacks aren't safe. We're looking at 2017 Bills defense here with a ceiling to be something much, much more impressive as they continue to grow and gel together. And while our offense is still finding its sea legs, they still look like they're up to the task of steadying the ship, or at least keeping us upright through games like that. Obviously, Allen's got to be better. Obviously, the defense can't win every game. But who gives a shit? When we're sitting right here today, we just wood-chippered the Miami Dolphins, who some people were ready to crown as the new cream of the crop in the AFC East. On route to taking back the divisional throne, and we have plenty of room to grow in the coming weeks. We demanded better, and they recognize the need for it. They don't need our noise. Okay? It's in-house. They delivered on that because that's what winners do. And Chris, it's like, who Talladega Nights?
Yeah. Those are winners. Winners get to do what they want.
The Buffalo Bills got to do what they want on Sunday. And for today, at least, the Buffalo Bills are giant friggin' winners. I love it. Chris, this has been a lot of fun. We gotta get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. And this has been your week to recap.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.